Okay, some of your messages as it relates to local property tax coming in a little late. A caller says, I've tested for defective blocks, but I'm not on the scheme. Do I have to pay the LPT or not? The answer is yes. But you can give it its lowest valuation, I presume. I mean, arguably the house in and of itself, what is it worth? Another caller says, I paid, but I didn't value my home. I guess its value as I couldn't afford the estate agent's fee. Do I do it right or how's that working? Well, you don't have to pay to get it valued officially. You can go on to certain websites, Daft, others, My Home. You'll see houses that have sold in your area. Listen, it's a guesstimation. I think really the bands are broad. The idea being, and I'm not doing revenues work here, that, you know, you should have some idea from within which band your house falls. And you can factor stuff in as well. A caller says, it's ridiculous that you have to be on the scheme, Greg. The worst, though, is we in Donegal have consistently been the first every term to have the maximum 15% increase to LPT when they know there is thousands with homes which are worthless. The one thing I'll say about that is it's not a 15% increase every year. It's a retention of the 15% increase year on year. So it's not going up 15% every year. They are voting often to retain the plus 15% to reduce it back to zero, or I think you can go 15% the other way. So it's not going up 50%. It's not going to make you feel any better. But the vote isn't to increase it every year by 15%. It's whether you retain it or not. A caller says, as an older person, I have no access online. What do I do? Well, call us back. We've got a telephone number there if you can't source it yourself, and ring them up. I live alone and I'm a pensioner. It is any cheaper for me. I really can't afford it. I'm very sorry that you're in that situation. I really am. And that's the truth, you know. Often we sort of are discussing about which band we're in, or it's unfair, or where does the money going? And there's people out there that literally don't have the money to pay it. It's another bill that they can't meet. What are we getting in return for LPT? Paying for rubbish, etc. Rural area, Infanta. James, thanks. Well, you heard from Revenue themselves. That money's passed on to the council, and it's up to the council to do with it what they do. It's often ring-fenced for match funding for projects, etc. Right. Let's say good morning to Brendan Devaney, presenter of the DL Debate. Brendan, how are you getting on?
Good, good. Got a crack, kid.
I'm all right. How are you? I haven't seen you in ages.
Yeah, we've missed each other now, you know.
Yeah. Between the jigs and the reels.
The jet set lifestyle of yours, you know.
Jet set. You're looking well anyway. Right, on this week's show, looking back at all the Ulster Club action from the weekend, it's hurling and football, so there's lots going on.
That's it, yeah. Birded a victory in the Junior Championship over Castlewell and St Union's. We had the game yesterday in the park, obviously coming up short against a very good Aero Carrigmore side. Now, they give it their all. They put themselves in a position in the second half where there was a chance, but I think overall Carrigmore were a bit better. 16 champions there in Tyrone, Greg, so it was a difficult one. Kieran Donner then in the football in the Junior Championship against a very good Emmyvale team, one of probably the favourites of the competition. They only lost by a point, a bit controversial too. A late free was given against them, Greg. It looks like it was heading to extra time. Our own Park Helfrey was down at the game, so he's coming on the show this evening to talk a bit about that. There's under 21 championship as well. We had the honours were given out at our Donegal Sports Awards, the GA Awards at the weekend there as well, down in Donegal Town. Jim McGuinness was present, and it was a good weekend, a lot happening.
Yeah, and a lot of general conversation as well. They're interesting reading in the back of the Donegal News. Donegal senior football manager Jim McGuinness views the McKenna Cup as a real opportunity for players to showcase themselves as they begin their plans for the 2026 campaign. Throwing the gauntlet down there, you know, prove yourself. Yeah, as a spot for whoever shows.
There's 18 new names on there, Greg. Yeah, he's bringing in 18 guys to have a look at this, and that's all part of it, you know, and test people out, see where they're at after we had a great club championship here right across the board. So last year, remember, the McKenna Cup was scrapped, so we went straight into the National League, and a wee bit cold, some people were saying. So it's been fitted into the calendar this year, so it's a great chance because, you know, gives people a chance, I suppose, to kind of find their way into the season, find their feet, but also for managers like Jim, to give people a chance, because it's difficult then in the league, Greg. I know it worked well for us last year because we were safe with a couple of games to go and we were allowed to play players and that, but that's not always guaranteed and you want to stay in the top flight, so it can be hard sometimes to blood players in games like that. So McKenna Cup's perfect.
Is there any risk at all in using, you know, big enough competitions to experiment, or is that just part of the game now?
Yeah, well, the fact is McKenna Cup, and listen, listen, we've got no disrespect, it. Nobody's that worried about winning it. You know, it is about a pre-season competition, but in many ways, it's four things you got to get players up to fitness. So whenever the league kicks off, everybody's good to go. And I suppose that's a real big competition then leading into the championship. So the McKenna Cup is just it's like a warm-up kind of competition. So perfect for that kind of thing, Greg. And, you know, yesterday as well, I left the hurling at Doherty, Mount Errigal there. St Union's had a bit of an underage thing. And it's just funny, when you're at things like that, Greg, you see how much now, if you look at St Union's, for example, their place in club football and in county football and in Donegal, what they're doing in the park. And all clubs are at that, obviously. I'll be out at Bonagie with the wee lads. But it's something very special you're seeing now is clubs are really growing into the community and they're an important place in it. And, you know, the personalities is there and the kids and the joy, but the coaches and the involvement in it. And I think it's something, listen, I'm not, as I say, it's across the board in many clubs, but it was so nice to see yesterday, you know, you've got a real community element. And it would always been there, I think, for the likes of GAA or different soccer teams and that. But I think the way things are so organised for kids and that now and the parents being there and involved, it really is getting into a massive community thing. And with the new working on it at Donald Park there, there's another pitch going down, there's a walkway going around, it's going to be lit up and that. It'll be open to everybody, Greg. And even the likes of Unions there do in the winter now, they would do some coaching down in the RNs for everyone to come, which I think is a great sign of what you can do in a community with the GAA to open it up, particularly for the kids.
Yeah, for sure. And it's great people doing it too, isn't it? You know, in the various clubs around the county, you know, certain halls on a Tuesday night at 7 p.m. or whatever, where they probably would want to be home. They're at the end of a working day or whatever. You know, the people that are out doing that work, obviously it's organised from the top down, but it comes down to brilliant volunteers doing that fantastic work you're talking of.
There was a time where we used to go to the shopping centre there down the Rikini to run about. So it was a large area to tear about, but much safer in the aura there and some wee bit of coaching going on. Good way to burn the energy for the kids, particularly over the winter.
Yeah, for sure. And great way to get to know your neighbours as well. Right, so the DL debate tonight, just after 7 o'clock. Gaelic Live's Michael McMullen's going to be on the show. Porrick Hilferty, as you've heard, Brendan reference, he's on it as well. It's on the DL debate tonight, Monday evening, 7 p.m. or after the 7 p.m. news, and available then as a podcast, highlandradio.com. And there's not much downtime, is there, really, between the jigs and the reels? And I suppose, particularly for in-demand players, there's not much downtime in the 365 days of the year, is there?
Yeah, you look at it, Greg, obviously the under 21 championship's going good guns there, and you've a lot of people there, lads involved in that, you know, involved in their senior team, involved in county squads, you know, different ages, you know, schools as well, colleges. So, yeah, sometimes, Greg, it's something that's been addressed a lot about if you're a real top player, you know, as he went by Rorty, obviously deservedly won the Footballer of the Year, you know. Listen, I'm just looking at him here in the paper. He's always a lad that plays a smile on his face, but sometimes you just think, right, there's a lot of people looking for some of our players, you know, and so many different codes. So it's a bit of a balancing act. But listen, if you ask them, what do you want to do? They want to play.
And if you ask any 40 or 50 year old, would they like that regime and be a top player? You'd say, yeah, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you might just need
At least you've done it, you see. Someone like me, I haven't done it, but at least you can reflect on memories, you bugger. All right, Brendan, listen, looking forward to the show, buddy. Take care of yourself. That's Brendan Devaney, the DL debate after the 7 o'clock news tonight, looking back on all the weekend's action and the big talking points. He's got Michael McMullen, Porrick Hilferty, etc. Okay, right, LPT, lots of you messaging in. I'm not surprised. I rang their helpline this past week and five times today. No response. They did say they were very busy, didn't they? Do you have the opportunity to leave a message? Because maybe that would qualify as engagement. Another caller says, if the councils are receiving all the LPT money, why are they adding on an extra 15%? We actually get more, I think, through equalisation. I mentioned this on the show last week. Is it okay to pay as usual in the post office, says the listener? That question was answered. Morning, Greg. Can you tell me why do we have to pay tax on our own house when the house is built on our own bit of land and we pay for the building of our house? The land and house was built with our money, so we pay tax on all that. So why do we have to pay tax on what we own? The government doesn't own our house. And I mean, if you wanted to go down further down that line, you know, what are you actually getting for it? And that is, I mean, we can highlight certain projects and this, that, and on, but there, you know, I think it would be more palatable if people, if it covered refuge or if it covered access to community centres or so on and so forth, you know, people might say, okay. But when you're paying a tax on something and it's not really terribly clear where that tax is going, I think it makes that tax feel even more unfair. A caller says, we think we registered our new valuation to revenue but received no email mail in return as promised. Are we now registered? You should be able to go on to the LPT website and log on, and it should indicate there as well. A caller says, I paid my property tax as usual in the post office, as I always do. Is this okay to do? A lot of you asking that, and she said, yes, I think. Another, if you're on the buy scheme from council, do you have to pay property tax? Another, I've not received a letter and cannot get through to their number and cannot remember my PIN number. I wonder, is your PIN number, can you go through the revenue website and get it there? Do you have any letter at all from them in relation to your LPT, either this year or previously? Because she said quite clearly that your property and PIN number is on any of that communication. Let me see, Spuds. There's so many of you texting in relation to Spuds, which is funny. Spuds, to get the perfect boiled spuds. Pick spuds similar in size, or if there are bigger ones in your bag, cut the bigger ones in half or quartered similar to your smaller ones and cook in cold water from the beginning, not hot water, to speed up the cooking time, as hot water cooks the outside quicker than the inside, so you end up with hard bits. Once they come to the boil, turn down so you can see the water bubbling gently and check periodically so you don't overboil. Always works for me for this year's spuds, and this applies also to steamer cooked spuds, I am told. Cunningham potatoes are freshly dug in Carndonagh and they're yummy. Okay, thanks for that. Steam them, end of problem, says the listener. And on it goes. Thanks for all your comments coming in. Now, let's get from the horse's mouth the situation as it relates to the 10T project, which we're all watching with great interest, some in certain parts of the counties, the county more than others. Damien McDermott is Senior Engineer with the National Roads Office and joins us now. Damien, good morning to you.
How you doing, Greg?
Not too bad, not too bad. Right, so I suppose you've seen probably, or you'd be familiar with the reports that are out there in relation to where we're at with the 10T road project. The timelines and conversation really quite similar to a previous update we got from your office. So what is the situation as it stands then?
Okay, so we're at a very critical point of the project, which is obviously a very major project. So we've completed over the last couple of years our design, our environmental assessments, and we're just about to get ready to publish the scheme. It goes through the strategic infrastructure development to our Commission Pinal, as they're called now. And that will also include the publication of the CPO and all the land acquisition requirements at the same time. So that's the stage where we're coming to. We're hoping to that now. Our aim is to have that happening in January. And that will commence the planning process for the scheme, which is the critical part of the scheme. So you had an analogy of horses there, from the horse's mouth. You know, if this is a race, like, you know, we get over every hurdle in the race. This is the Beaches Brook of hurdles that we have to get over, and we can't afford to fall or we're out of the race. So it's important that we get this published, get it done right, and hopefully get through the planning process, which is always the most difficult process for any major infrastructure project.
And across the county, what areas are we talking about, just so everyone knows, because it's a massive project.
Okay, so,
potentially.
There's massive projects. The project is in the order of, you know, almost €1 billion in value. There's three sections in it. The first section is a bypass of Ballybuffet and Stranraer, starting just south of the Roadhouse Bar, if you know that, on the N15, south of Ballybuffet, and re-emerging again then, going to the north of the town, and re-emerging again then on the Letterkenny side of Kilross Junction. Okay. So that's basically that section. Now, you know, and that includes very close. There's also a link then from there down on the N15 down back onto the Stranraer Lifford Road as part of that scheme. So that's section one. Section two then starts at Listillion, and basically bypasses the Lurgie Brack section of the roads that's there at the moment, crossing the dual carriageway in around where Donegal Glass is there, approximately around there, and then heading across the Swilly to join up at the Creamery with a new junction at the Creamery roundabout, where the Creamery roundabout is at the moment. So there'll be a new crossing there. So basically a bypass to the south of Letterkenny. So it'll take some of the pressure off the four-lane road and the N56 in the town. And the third section then really is an upgrade of the dual carriageway all the way through. That's including just taking off the direct access junctions, such as Trimera, and then basically running all the way through from Manor Cunningham all the way through as a new road, all the way through as far as Lifford, bypassing Lifford on the Ballybrookay side and connecting there into the across the river to the potential A5 Western Transport Corridor in Strabane. The scheme also allows for, if the A5 isn't going ahead, there's always a chance of these things not progressing, that it connects into the existing network there and again to utilise the existing bridge anyway. So it works with or without the A5 in place. That's essentially the scheme. So there's, look, it's 42 kilometres, there's 63 kilometres of active travel on the scheme. There is about 1,500 acres of land being acquired for the scheme. And, you know, there's over 500 landowners affected. And there's 34 properties being acquired, 4 commercial properties, and a number of uninhabited properties as well.
But given the scale, of it, and this is notwithstanding, you know, that someone might be upset or not, I can't go into. Given the scale of this project, would that be deemed a relatively low book of CPOs, so to speak, you know, and a relatively low, given the scale of the project, to gain compared to others, amount of house acquisitions, or is this in line with what you would have expected to see?
I think it's on par with what you would see. It all really comes down to the type of landowners you go through. The more urban areas, you get more landowners, you get more plots. The more rural areas, you tend to have bigger farm holdings. We have a mixture of all that. So, no, it's about average, I think, for such schemes. It's a very big scheme nationally. Like, it'd be bigger than Limerick Foynes and all these schemes. And again, you're going to probably through more countryside down there and bigger farms, so therefore you have less landowners. But no, in general, I think it's about on par.
So in terms of the CPOs, right, compulsory purchase orders, what does that actually mean? Does that mean there's been engagement with the property owners? Some have agreed, some haven't, and those that haven't are subject to CPOs. So what does that actually mean in terms of this project, Damien? I presume there's been engagement, has they, with all of them?
There's been engagement. Yes, there's engagement. All landlords that we've been possible that we can contact have been. So there've been over 5,000 engagements. You know, and there've been 16 public consultation events, and all the landlords have been met at one-to-one engagements, so wherever possible as well. So they've all been informed of what's happening, so they'll all be aware of what's happening. The next step, really, so they'll know what land is being acquired or if their property is being acquired. So all those people will be aware of that at this stage. Now, in some cases, there'll be owners and there'll be reputed owners, and there'll be maybe, you know, as you know, different people involved. But in general terms, they'll be all know what is happening at this stage. So the design has been tied down for a number of years now. As regards negotiation, that doesn't happen until we publish. And at that point then, everybody will receive a letter from us identifying what land has been acquired and a map of the land being acquired for the scheme. And basically then there's a process in place then by which they appoint experts on their behalf. We have our experts, and then there's a negotiation in respect to the purchase of those lands.
So
or
really,
property.
What I was, and that, I think that answers it. So really, in this case, a CPO, it doesn't mean that negotiation or agreement hasn't been reached. It's part of a process to say, look, this is where it's going. This is the system for acquiring land. But in the first instance, we will negotiate, speak, etc., right? Because CPO has connotations, but we're not at that that point yet. Does that make sense? You know what I mean?
The compulsory part really is that we are going to acquire the land. That's the compulsory part, not the negotiation. It's not as if there's a negotiation to be had at that point. And those always can, depending on how things go, they can be fairly quick. There's a whole process involved in that. And, you know, we do our best to deal evenly and properly with everybody based on, you know, current rates and all that. You get experts in, valuation experts in, that do the valuations on both sides. And we generally expect, and in most cases we do, looking at Burtonport Dunlow to Glenties, you know, in 70-80% of cases, there's fairly rapid agreement on the prices. You know, I think there'll be always cases where there'll be disagreements, and there's a procedure for dealing with those disagreements as we go forward as well.
Is the route set now, or say, for instance, you landed at someone's farm and moving the road slightly might not break up a section of land, for an example, I'm just using a random example there, Damien. Is there still some slight negotiation on the trajectory of the road, or is that all locked in now?
No, that's all locked in, and that has been the focus of all the consultation to date. Where there are issues like that that people want to resolve, we have tried to do that over the last number of years in the design modifications. But at this point, no, we're locked into this is the design. This is what we require to build the scheme. And everything that's in the CPO is required. So there can be no modification of that going forward.
All right, you made a list 1, 2, 3 of the stages of this. Now, of course, you have to start somewhere and end somewhere. But would it be envisaged that they would be done in an order, or that work would be ongoing on effectively all sites at the same time? Or would you do Ballybor Face from all the first, then move up to sort of Lurgy Brack direction? How might that work, or is that even planned out at this stage?
Ideally, you know, we'd probably like to see the whole lot commence at the same time, because obviously you don't want things to drag out too long if you start doing it in phases. But it certainly can be their scope, because you have three distinct sections in the scheme, and probably even more than that if you want to break it down further, that it could be done that way. It'll all come down to government finances at the time. That probably the appropriate way of procuring the scheme. It'll come down to the capacity of the industry to deliver such a major scheme. Like, we don't have an awful plethora of major contractors nationally to be able to deal with such a scheme. So those are factors that will come into consideration. And, you know, really that'll all be thought of as soon as we get through the planning process, first of all.
Do you have any concerns, Damien? Do you have any concerns that the scale of this project might reduce the players to an extent that it could drive up the cost of it, because it is so big? And I would say off air, you could probably name, I don't know how many contractors you could name, and I wouldn't ask you to, that could take this on. Is there any concerns that we have sort of the competition to get this at a reasonable price, a good value for money to the taxpayer?
Yeah, well, that's all been part of the analysis we've done in the business case to date. That's all been looked at in that. And look, yeah, there would be some concerns with that, but I mean, it's well flagged, the scheme. There are enough players out there. It's all about timing and as regards what other schemes are out there at the time. Now, we'll be the only scheme that will be out there when this comes, right, if this goes through the process as we think. So we think it shouldn't be that much of an issue. And there's also the possibility for international players to come in, like we had when the motorway network was done around the country. So there are a lot of major projects happening in the country with Metro and all that. So there's probably more interest internationally in these products as well, potentially. So we'd hope that'd be the case.
I would say the worst thing any senior roads engineer might want to stick out there is timelines, but I think you did give a timeline. You know, with everything going to plan, a commencement of 2028, and potentially 5 years of works. How optimistic is that? How realistic is that? I mean, obviously, as I say, it's a length of string to some extent, but you put those dates out there.
Well, generally, look, we feel that that's absolutely doable. The key thing is the planning process. It all comes down to the level of objection to the scheme, the level of support for the scheme, and that there's no environmental issue arises that might cause a problem at the planning process. The planning process is absolutely key to this. We've allowed for a year and a half for that. Unbolpral could come back, Commission Plan could come back and give us an oral hearing or make a decision scheme in a very short period of time, or they might not even get an oral hearing for this year, next year at all. So like that's where the issue of the programme really lies. Other than that, I think once we get through the planning process, the delivery of the scheme then is fairly straightforward, as we know the path on it. It's difficult and there'll be a lot of work involved in it. But again, it's a very straightforward. And again, the chance of doing it in phases, then we might be able to get ahead of that in getting sections done if we want to break it up that way, such as they've done down on the Adair bypass, for example, which is a good example of where they've gone ahead with a section so as to get the thing moving.
And everyone's been talking about this bridge for so long, Damien, and perhaps maybe we are on the brink of something. We're cutting up, I think it was Beecher's Brook you talked of. If we get over that, like, would it be? Would you look at it and go, right, can the scheme be divvied up in such a way that maybe priority could be given to that? You know, because you have to figure out how it would fit into elsewhere infrastructurally. But is there scope for something along those lines that maybe, right, listen, we can get work done on this bridge to begin with?
There is always scope for that. But look, you know, all sections are very important. And I don't want to...
No, I know that. I do understand that. Yeah. I mean, Ballybofane Street has been...
You come to Ballybofane every day. Yeah. You know that yourself as well.
65
you know, that
years.
You know that. So look, but there's also feasibility that you'd have two contracts, separate contracts, running at the same time. You know, there's all matter of ways of doing this. You could have a separate contract for Ballybofane because all the sections have been designed in such a way that they can be delivered independently of the other sections.
Yeah, okay, but obviously the ideal is that
we've done it that way on purpose.
The ideal is that you get it all done as quickly as is possible, and presumably maybe contractors would prefer to do it that way if they could scale. One eye in the papers today could be speculative about the bar being raised for objections, that some reference of, you know, people having to be directly affected before they can object. I have a feeling that that's not going to impact on this project. I don't know if you even saw those reports, Damien.
No, it doesn't impact because the new planning act won't be in place for this scheme. This will be going in existing Strategic Development Act, which is good in a certain way because we know what that process entails. You obviously have those potential for judicial review and all that, so which seems to happen on most of our schemes these days. But look, we can only hope that we won't have that sort of level of objection and concerted effort to block the scheme. So we're hoping that doesn't arise in our case. But look, if it does, we have to deal with it. And schemes do come out at the end of that. I mean, other schemes, such as I said, Limerick Fines would have been subject to those judicial reviews and have come out the other end of it. So it just means that it'll delay the process rather than stopping it in most instances.
Okay. I think we touched on everything there, Damien, that I wasn't privy to the presentation to councillors. Well, I think we touched on the most of it there, didn't we? There's a lot within your power, so to speak, and a lot outside of it, i.e., you know, the purse strings being opened, etc. But I think we've covered most of it there. Okay, Damien, listen, thanks for your time and thanks for coming on. It makes it so much easier and it's great to have access to the likes of yourself. It makes it so much easier than sort of speculating when we get it straight from the likes of yourself. So appreciate that.
No problem. Thank you very much.
Have a good day. Yes, indeed. A caller says Ballybofane Stranooler is talked about from the early 1960s. How much longer? And Donal was just saying between the ad break, he recounts an exchange at a council meeting whereby someone said or was protesting and stated, if we don't get a move on, we'll not see this road before 2010. And I think that's when it was going in the other direction, on the other side of Ballybofane Stranooler. And here we are in 2025. Right. On this morning's Monday's Focus, we look at a new initiative on Pen Pals. Celine Kilcoyne is a transformational life coach and is with me now. Good morning, Celine.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Thank you
so very, very much for this opportunity.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's a nice initiative as well. So talk to me about your thinking behind it.
Well, thinking about it is, I suppose, based on two stories. I suppose going back a while when I worked in healthcare and a six-bedded ward was like a microcosm of the world. And you had some patients who had no visitors at all. And I'd done my best to try and spend time with them because I was very much aware that they would see other visitors coming in to the other patients. And I suppose what really was the impetus for this was hearing two bachelors who were standing beside me one day speaking of the fact of that they were going to write letters to themselves to get the postman to call to their door. And I would like to preempt this by saying post people are actually wonderful, I believe, in helping and supporting people who are lonely.
Sometimes it's the only person they see from one end of the week to the next.
Well, yes. And I suppose I want to say as well that you know, the initiative compliments that are already are marvellous, you know, that there are many groups, you know, that are, you know, actually, you know, doing marvellous work, you know, in this endeavour. And I want to note that as well. And definitely Highland Radio and local radios, I feel, play a massive part in this lifeline for people, connections, music, you know, company.
Loneliness and isolation saddens me greatly, especially when it affects older people, because, you know, in our rush to move forward or improve? We leave, firstly, I question whether we are moving forward or improving, but we leave so many behind. And loneliness, isolation can have a very difficult impact on someone's their emotional well-being, their physical health. Time, the concept of time, something, you know, we all take for granted, and anything we can do to address that. And let's not forget, we all got a taste of this during COVID. So you know what we're talking about here. Anything we can do to relieve that, we should be doing, Celine. How would and how do you hope creating or engaging with pen pals might help?
Well, I personally believe, because it's intergenerational, you know, Greg, and I suppose at this point in time, it's school children and it's children in, well, it's adults in youth reach centres. So I suppose receiving a letter and, you know, opening the letter, making a connection, it's a conversation. You can return to the letter, you respond to the letter, you build a connection with that person. I believe that it'll help both recipients. Like, it's the person writing the letter, receiving the letter, then responding to the letter. It's a very slow process. It's a building relationships. And only recently I've spoken to two people. One who spoke of that they received a letter after their father died. And in that letter, they received stories actually about their father that they hadn't known of. And they returned to that letter, picked it up time and time again.
I can imagine. I can imagine. And you know what? You could get institutionalized as well. So any contact with the outside world would be useful. So is this something you're proposing? Have you got a framework in place? Is it up and running? Where are you at, Celine, in trying to get this going?
Well, I suppose, just so you know, at the moment, it is actually up and running in both Sligo and Leitrim. I have collected letters, 36 letters, and delivered them to a resource centre. And just so you know, the guidelines of what happened, I contacted the resource centre because they were delivering the Meals on Wheels. And one of the ladies kindly said to me to run with GDPR regulations, they would offer an opt-in letter with the meals so the people would respond to that, and then the letters would be delivered directly with the Meals on Wheels. I am covering, at this time, I'm focusing on Sligo and Leitrim, so I suppose I would like to invite others in bringing this Pen Pals initiative to your listeners and the surrounding areas. And in as much as I can, I will offer my support and guidance in this endeavour, because I feel, Greg, that this is a need really to spread out throughout the whole country.
Mm. What feedback have you got so far?
Well, the feedback, in essence, you know, I suppose I'm speaking to the managers of the resource centres, and they're saying that this is a great initiative. And actually, one of them spoke of during COVID, the way letters were sent out and a book, and the opt-in letters from the other resource centres just gone out this week.
Okay.
But I suppose speaking to both of the managers, they spoke about how, yes, they feel, particularly at this time, that people would feel maybe more lonely at this time of year.
All right, if someone would like to create something similar in this part of the world or wherever they happen to be listening to us from and want to maybe, get some advice from you, Celine, we have your number here, but is there a way for people generally to contact you to find out what you're doing and see if that model would fit in with the people that they work with or in their community?
Yes, well, I suppose, like, I mean, people can, if you're asking, Greg, how can people contact me?
Yeah,
sure. They can contact me on my surname, my first name, at gmail.com. So that's Kilcoyne, K-I-L-C-O-Y-N-E, C-E-L-I-N-E, at gmail.com.
Okay.
My phone number is 087-630-2518. I'm also available on social media, but predominantly, I suppose, in this endeavour, if they could reach out to me through my Gmail.
Lovely stuff. Thank you so much for your time, and we'll hopefully it grows into something even bigger and better. Thanks so much. That's Celine Kilcoyne, transformational life coach. KilcoyneCeline@gmail.com if you want to get involved in that, if you see the benefit to it. Kieran Brogan, refunding the new Bridge 10T project, approved 5 years ago, only looking for funding now. Previous project 13 to 14 years ago, Windy Hall Road to Kirkstown, was approved. It's still not been done. Announcements are made, but the action doesn't follow through. No point having announcements, but then not seeking funding at the time. Did that come from... Oh, Caroline's just... That didn't come from Kieran Brogan, did it? Or did it? No, I don't know why he's referenced in that. The bottom line is though, in terms of the process... All right, okay. He's on the news. That's a quote from him. I haven't heard him directly. But the bottom line is that this is one big project. The government has committed to funding it. Is it included in estimates at this time? I'm not quite sure. But we can't even see if funding will be forthcoming unless the council get it, the project over the line. A lot of money's been spent, not the council, but the roads and the council are involved in it as well. But get the project to the point whereby is we're ready to go. Where's the cash? So we can sort of say, well, the money won't be there, but we don't know at this point. We could be heading towards some sort of an economic crash in this country as well. But that being said, the government says that it is, even in the event of the economy shrinking, that it is hoping to keep the spending up on infrastructural projects. So we'll just have to wait and see. A caller says the councillors are happy to increase LPT by 15% but won't touch commercial rates. Wonder, do any councillors own a business? Well, it's not all councillors. Enough get it over the line. There's some vote against it. Some don't vote at all. But it's a locked in 15% on top of what we pay every year. It doesn't go up 15% every year, but I'm not going to keep making that point. But it's just in case people think it's increased by them. It's about whether you retain that extra every year. I didn't get my LPT renewal letter. Checked around in case it was delivered to someone else. Managed to get through to the tax office. Said it was posted on the 15th of September. Was able to pay with my debit card over the phone. When one of the breaks was on, I went into revenue on my phone. Scrolled down, there is an LPT section and it did tell me where I'm at the moment. So when the show's off air, I will go back on and I'll see if I can do it through the revenue website. I have my property tax through my employer deduction scheme. It's very handy, but if I were to kick my clogs, the tax deduction would cease and my family would be unaware of the fact that it was no longer being paid. They could face serious fines and penalties for what could be 5 years of non-payment. I would say revenue wouldn't be long sending a letter out, but I take your point. I'm going to double check. I hope I pay mine through a deduction of wages. Imagine if I wasn't doing that. How many years would I be liable for? God, I don't even want to think about it. That's really set me thinking now. Will I be able to finish the show? I hope so. Have I paid my LPT? I hope so. A caller says, as we did our outer leave in the scheme 2 years ago and we're still waiting for our 40-year guarantee, how do we value our home? Maybe this has been answered. Sorry, we missed that part of the show. No, yours is such a specific... if your house has been remediated, I mean, are you signed off on? I know you didn't get the 40-year guarantee. That's a conversation you're going to have directly with LPT because it's not unique, but it's really quite specific. Nolene lives in Manchester, a holiday home in Buncrana. Letter probably sitting in a house in Buncrana, but has no way of getting it. Can't travel due to age and illness. Has standing order from bank for previous years. What do you do in that situation? Do you have an? If you have one of the letters at home, you can log on from Manchester and put in your or they or someone on their behalf could put in their house number and the PIN. So it will be on a letter. I don't know if you have any letters retained. Or you could ring and they will send out the PIN to your new address or someone can on your behalf. It's a complicated one, that of course. April the 1st already, lol. Much chance of a bridge than airport or railway for Letterkenny. Yeah, well, I mean, I have to park my cynicism sometimes and say, well, let's wait and see. I know these people are working hard on this project with a view to it beginning and completing. And might I be travelling over that bridge in 2032 if I'm alive? I don't know. We'll see. Lots more comments coming in. I'm going to try and get through as many of them as I possibly can. But let's take a break and then we'll get the weather. Right, now to some of your comments on a range of subjects. But as I invite them, it's very important that I reference them. A caller says, I think it's extremely concerning that Britain's Queen gave money to Prince Andrew, or Andrew as he's known now, to pay off a victim of abuse. What action will be taken against the royal family on the issue? Paying off a victim is the greatest of crimes and the royal family should be no different. Andrew should also face the courts for his crimes. That whole Jeffrey Epstein thing is very peculiar to me. That, you know, you would get... Just brief down, because I track it a little bit. You've got the American government, effectively. Donald Trump's named in the Epstein files, though there's mixed messages as to what he was doing within them. And there's lots of other big hitters in it as well. And the US government now effectively say there was no trafficking going on, right? But they've got that Ghislaine Maxwell in prison for child trafficking, for trafficking people for sex. So if the government is saying there is no trafficking that went on, why have they got someone in prison for doing that? How could they, how is someone convicted for it? And also, too, you know, the fact that they're covering in the British media, covering Andrew and his case, and he's moving out of the house, and that the royal family is saying he denies it. Well, if he's denying it, why is he moving out of the house? And if he's moving out of the house because maybe they think something went on, why isn't he in front of the courts? Why are these rich people are able to get away with this all of the time? So can a few things be true at the same time? So obviously the royal family think the accusations hold enough water that they've stripped him of all of his titles, thrown him out of the house that he was renting, and completely disassociated themselves with him. But at the same time, they put out a statement saying that he strongly denies the charges. Well, then don't throw him out of the house. Don't strip him of his titles. Or if you believe there's some wrongdoing, get him in front of a court. It's very, very peculiar. Some very, very powerful, very influential people are involved in that, and yet nothing is ever going to seemingly come of it. IPAS centres, seems like the lifelong dole heads in this country are only good at burning stuff down. Maybe if they want and got themselves a job and stopped leeching more than the immigrants, they'd be too busy to endanger women and children. Now, there's a couple of things going on in that text. In the text sender is making a judgment on a whole group of people, which is exactly what that whole group of people arguably are doing in terms of refugees, you know. So you're doing to others what you're probably critical of others doing to refugees, which is kind of a contradiction to me, to be honest with you, with respect. Also, we don't know the job status of whomever was responsible. The government and media have lost the immigration debate. How about an apology to the people of Ireland for labelling those that question things as misinformation far right? Well, I have no apology to give, because we've always facilitated fair, balanced conversation on this issue on this programme. And I can, it's all, every single show's on YouTube. So go and find one situation where people unchallenged are referencing to people who are anti-immigration as far right. Those words never come out of my mouth, and they never come out of another's mouth without being challenged. So I won't be apologising, but I take your point. Replanning objections. Unless you're residing in an area, you should have no say. This would preclude holiday home owners or people classes not being stakeholders. No, I think if you have property in the area, you're directly affected by it, even if it's holiday home. No, I've seen and read people submitting from South Leitrim objections to developments in Donegal Town, talking about the view and the scenery, and when they visit the area, this is what they like to see. I'm not on about people who have a... If you have a holiday home in an area, you know, you have a say in that area. That's not what I was referencing. Greg, the law is the law. The government cannot change European law on the environment. The laws are there for a reason, to protect the environment. I'm surprised you're falling for builders and government lies about delays. The government should be building social houses instead of pandering to building companies. The laws I referenced were not about circumventing European law and environmental issues. They were about people from outside areas objecting to developments in areas that they're not resident in. But I take your point. I'm not pandering to anyone, by the way. Hi, Greg. Being a bit flippant here, but has anyone heard how Heather Humphrey's Irish classes are going, or was all a bit of smoke and mirrors? I don't know. We'll probably never find out what comes from that. Bus charges for free travel pass an issue here. A caller says, in fact, it's Michael, regularly has to travel to Dublin for hospital appointments and has a free bus pass and has companion traveller as well. Bus companies insist on booking online and charge up to €3 each, so it's costing €6 each time he has to travel. That's come up for a long time, that the free bus pass, having to book your place online and there being a charge for that. It's a problem, isn't it? But I don't know. Anyone, any further information in relation to that? I didn't realise it was €3 each. I thought it was €1.50 or €2, but there you go. Joseph, staying in a hotel in Donegal on the weekend, was asked for photo ID and they took the licence and scanned it. Is this normal? Concerned about businesses having the ID on file in case it could be used fraudulently. If I go far and the first thing they do is scan the photo ID, I'm not sure. Is it normal in Ireland? I've never seen it in Ireland before. the business, though, in terms of your ID, there's very strict laws in terms of what they can do with that information, GDPR, etc. But this is the first time I've heard of photo ID being scanned in a business or hotel, you know, accommodation in Ireland. I haven't come across that before. Is it the new norm? I don't know. Is the Bonagy link prioritised as part of the project, asked the listener? Not per se, I think was the answer. Have you ever heard so much BS and you wonder why the majority of the electorate don't turn out or spoil their votes in elections? Don't be fooled. There'll be no bridge or 10T before 2040 at the earliest, if at all, says the listener. In capitals as well, so they mean business. Caller phoned the LPT helpline, got automated message to say that lines are very busy and suggest to go online. Again, what I'm going to do when I come off air and do the podcast, etc., is I'm going to go into revenue.ie. There is an LPT section and I'll report back. It's not for everyone. And every time I go onto LPT or onto revenue, I have to get a text message and then fill it in and you know yourself. Issues with fisheries are the exact same issues that the beef farmers and abattoirs are having. Department of Food and Agriculture looks after fisheries, farmers, forestry. They all need to come together to hold the government accountable as they are all having the same issues. Okay, interesting. On the issue of fishing, farming gets the same harassment from the department inspectors as the fishing industry does. But I mean, obviously, Brendan Byrne speaks on behalf of fish processors, so the absence of us talking about that is not a... is not a absence of it actually happening. So I'm more than happy to talk about that if you're a farmer who feels the same or you're a farming organisation and you're getting the same treatment. Let's have that conversation too. And more comments coming in that I just didn't quite get to, but we will carry them over and carry them on Tuesday's show. But that's where we have to leave it today. Thank you very much for listening. On behalf of me, Greg Hughes, and researcher, producer Caroline Orr, we'll chat to you again tomorrow morning from 9 a.m.